Good morning. I'm David Ellis, and I welcome you to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks for Friday, the first day of June 2018. The start of the hurricane season as well. And, you know, hurricanes come in all shapes and sizes for some countries. Some countries get the wind and the rain, and some people seem to have man-made disasters from time to time. We sit here in Barbados hoping that we have neither. But as we speak today, there is quite a lot that is happening politically in this country. And a lot was revealed yesterday about the state of this economy. There is no doubt in anybody's mind that the Barbados economy is in need of urgent attention. But of course, at the political level, we also have had what I've called the political political earthquake. And we've seen the Barbados Labour Party take all of the seats in Parliament. And today, we have one of their members announcing that he will go on the opposition bench. That still needs to be spelled out in some detail. It's a first for our country. And one point of view is that having not been given a ministry, taking the role of opposition leader puts Bishop Joseph Atherley in a position where he'll be able to take home a bigger pay packet than if he were a minister of government. He has to spell out for the public of Barbados what has motivated him, whether there is something that has happened at the political level involving himself and the Prime Minister and the Barbados Labour Party, to cause him to do that, whether he considers that there's such a lopsided situation in Parliament that the country requires that somebody has to take this jump. Somebody's got to do the dirty work. Some people may call it that. What exactly is his thinking? Is he still a B? And significantly, who is he going to appoint to the Senate? Is he going to appoint anybody to the Senate? Look, the people who should be discussing these matters are the political scientists. So let me see if I can get Peter Wickham is supposed to be on the line. I spoke to him a short while ago and asked him to join us at the start of the program. Peter, are you there?
Hey, morning, David. Yeah, I'm right here.
Morning. Your assessment of all that's been going on. They say a week in politics is a long time, but this feels like, wow, so much has happened in this past week.
I mean, from Friday last week to Friday this week, I mean, we had one record after another. And, yeah, as you said, this is definitely the hurricane season for politics. And what happened last night was a shock. It came to me as a big shock. And like you, I think that Reverend Atherley needs to have a conversation with the people of Barbados and his constituents to explain what he has done. Because it certainly appears illogical. I mean, I agree with your two sides of your scenario that perhaps he's a conscientious BLP supporter, and he's doing this because he believes that this is the way to manage the affairs without an opposition. Alternatively, he could be opposed to the Barbados Labour Party and unhappy with Mia Motley and in search of a higher salary. My sense is that public opinion has already decided which side they're falling on, and they feel like he's up to some kind of mischief, and they don't believe that he has the best interest of the Barbados Labour Party at heart. And the unfortunate thing, David, is that this comes at a time when the vast majority of people seem to be emotionally behind Prime Minister Mia Motley. In light of that, I really do feel that she does not come out a loser in this regard. And he does, because you're looking at a person who is advanced in years. Reverend Atherley is not a political heavyweight by any far stretch of the imagination. So he will spend his last 5 years on the opposition benches, drawing an attractive salary. He has some patronage to exercise. If he decides to exercise it, it will be exercised. If he doesn't, those posts will remain vacant.
What's the patronage that he has to exercise, in your judgment?
Well, I mean, is the two seats in opposition, the two seats in the Senate are at his disposal now. He has to appoint a secretary and an assistant at the level of the leader of the opposition, and he will have the office to occupy with all the benefits that derive from that, and he will probably do so. In addition to that, if he declares himself a political party, like if he says, well, I'm now the independent Barbados Labour Party, or I am the People's Labour Party, as is the case in St. Vincent, Kitts and Nevis. If he does that, then he gets the benefit of half of the $250,000 which is there for political parties. And then he can appoint the, he's chairman of the Public Accounts Committee. He can appoint a person to the Electoral and Boundaries Commission. He gets consulted on all major appointments, and those are significant benefits.
So is there a possibility that he can resile from doing any of those things?
He most certainly can, and if he doesn't, then basically then no one gets consulted. So the EBC will then have two instead of three people, or alternatively the Governor General can appoint this person. But my thing is that why would you want to be leader of the opposition if you don't want to do these things? I mean, that's the reason why.
But it seems as though he's gone for more work than he's ever had in his life.
Precisely. And it sounds that way to me, because if he's not one for enthusiastic work and to make appointments and whatnot, he could as well not be there. So, as you said, David, now I'm looking to see who are the people that he will choose for the Senate and for the chairmanship of the EBC, the deputy chairmanship of the EBC. Who will he put in the office of the leader of the opposition, who will be his assistant and secretary? And all of these are the people that I think we're now looking to see what is the shape of it. But it's not without precedent, I believe.
That's why I was about to ask you for the precedent.
Yeah, in Grenada, coming on to the end of Mitchell's first term with Fife, he had one person who defected. And the person was like Azali at the end of his career. And he just went over and he sat as leader of the opposition for a short time. The problem is that history doesn't remember him. I don't even remember the individual's name. And I think that Adelie will be like that. He will be part of a history of...
But come, let's be realistic on this one. If Reverend Bishop Adelie hadn't done this, would his name be more prominent in history? Or would he be more prominent for having done this? Because let's assume that he had been given a ministry. He was a minister before. I don't think that, and I'm not knocking him as a person, but anything in terms of political prominence, it cannot be said that he would have stood out over the years as somebody who had a portfolio. So while you are saying on the one hand that it is likely that he will just go into the dustbin of history in these circumstances, I suggest to you that on the contrary, he may well now position himself in the history books, the political history books of Barbados, by virtue of the fact that he has done this.
And certainly for the individual, in the same way that Prime Minister Francis Stewart is being remembered as the seventh Prime Minister of Barbados, I certainly think that he will be remembered as the person who did this. So my challenge, David, is that that's not, to me, what it should be about. His constituents, however, would probably prefer him to be part of the BLP team, lobbying on their behalf for various stuff in the constituency level. He can't do anything for anyone as opposition leader. He does a lot for himself. So certainly he's etched a name in a place where the name would not have been.
He's opposition leader. Suppose he's opposition leader in name, but within his heart. I heard a piece, somebody tells me that this is the president of his branch who was speaking this morning in a voice note, essentially saying that he remains a B at heart.
But how does that work?
Because it is, some people suggest it's about the money. At the end of the day, this is the figure that I have here. The opposition leader, by law, gets $129,000 a month, an entertainment allowance of $18,337, a duty allowance of $14,708, and when you add them all up, it's $162,000 a year. So, I mean, if he says, look, I feel hard done because I should have been a minister. I was a minister before, and you bring all these neophytes and put them in ministries. First of all, it's one thing to get left out of the ministerial lineup, but then I don't even get a pick as a parliamentary secretary, and I have to live. And in these circumstances, here's an opportunity for me to make some additional money. But at the end of the day, I will find a way not to disappoint the people who voted for me as a Barbados Labour Party representative. Can't he do that?
I think in theory he can, but in practice, what, he's going to divide up the $160,000 and give people?
Not necessarily. He doesn't have to give it to a soul. But at the end, you know, he's still in a position to speak on their behalf. There are people, let me look at it from this angle. There are people, other people in the Barbados Labour Party who have not been given ministerial portfolios. They are in no position, therefore, to do anything more for their constituents than Reverend Adelie. or Bishop Anthony, forgive me, because I knew him so well as Reverend. In the intervening period, he became Bishop, and I get confused. So forgive me. Yes.
No, I don't agree with that, David, because I do feel that someone like Ian Goodenezer, for example, who arguably is better employed than Bishop Atherley was, but, I mean, he's in a position now to lobby for things that he was not in a position to lobby for before, and I feel that the ministers, knowing the situation where he doesn't have a ministry, may be even more disposed to help him get things done at the constituency level.
Let me ask you, let me put it another way to you. We have to look at this from different angles. One of the criticisms that I've heard over the years has been the fact that the backbench wasn't strong and that there was no way that you could put the brakes on government. Indeed, in the period that has just ended with a 14-16 difference in parliament, it seemed to make no real impact because the government could do as it pleased, it appeared, notwithstanding the fact that it didn't have a two-thirds majority. In many respects, it did what it wanted to do. Therefore, to that extent, he is in no worse off position sitting as opposition leader than if he were sitting on the backbench. That is one way of looking at it.
I don't agree with that, because I feel that being part of government is about being able to go to the Minister of Transport and say, look, I need to have this road done. How can you assist me? And I feel that when you are in opposition benches, you don't have that access.
But this isn't traditional opposition. This is an opposition man who is saying, listen, I'm opposition in name, but I'm still a BLP at heart.
Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. So why is he going to subject himself to the whip? If he's going to subject himself to the party whip, if he's going to be able to be told how to vote by Cynthia Bradshaw.
But they don't need to do that. They got enough votes already that they don't have to draw him under the whip.
Yeah, there you go. But a person who is part of the team in parliament means that the person is subjected to the whip. And when Arthur came out from under the whip, that was when he said he no longer wanted to sit as a Barbados Labour Party member.
Well, I wait to see how he is going to finesse this today, because I expect that he's going to have some kind of press briefing or something during the course of the day. So we want to hear. But I think especially the people who voted for him in his constituency need to be spoken with. And this raises another important issue in Barbados. This is yet another example of somebody who is elected by a group of people. And essentially, without even consulting those people, this man unilaterally determines what he is going to do next. Having had them, having had the leader of the party that he went into the elections with, and the whole party apparatus behind him, he unilaterally decides this is what he's going to do. Now, he is within his rights, according to law, to do that. But the question which will be prominent in the minds of many people is, how right is that for us to continue with a system like that in Barbados in light of the fact that we have other Caribbean countries where that can't happen? If you quit the party, then you quit your seat. But in the context of Barbados, that's not the way that it's done. What are your thoughts?
But David, that's something I heard a lot this morning, that it should be illegal. The problem is that it's impossible to make it illegal. The Westminster system elects you as a minister, as an individual. Mm-hmm. You can't be elected as an individual and then be forced to vote with a party, because your individual rights are then infringed. So Trinidad and Tobago has crossing-the-floor legislation.
Correct.
And what happened, Basil Pandey left the ULF and sat as an independent member of the ULF. And then when Parliament was dissolved, formed the UNC. And it has happened over and over again with different members of Parliament sitting as independent members of the party and then rejoining the party or alternatively leaving altogether. So it is easier said than done. And if we had crossing-the-floor legislation like Trinidad and Tobago, all it would mean is that Reverend Adderley would sit now as an independent member of the Barbados Labour Party, but he does not have an obligation to go back because he was elected on his own right, and he will argue that he has individual freedom to associate and to disassociate. Unless you change the constitution and you force him by way of being part of a team to surrender his right to freedom of association, I don't know that is something that could fly. So legally, I don't know that it's possible. And, you know, in Trinidad, we've seen them struggle with it. Yes, we did have this guy from FIFA who left a few years ago, and he actually ran as an independent and won. But we have to remember that that was a specialized case because he actually wanted to prove a point. Unless he wanted to prove a point, he didn't have to. So we had Jillian Lucky, for example, who started as an independent member after she fell out with Basil Fande, and she's now a judge, but I think initially she sat as an independent member, and she wasn't forced to resign. And the problem, we have a system that elects people individually, and we can't just, you know, as much as I think it would make a whole lot of sense, because Reverend Adderley is there because of the Barbados Labour Party, not because of himself.
You already understand that as we speak, Reverend Adderley is being sworn in at Government House. I think what is particularly relevant to us, though, is what he has to say after he's been sworn in. And we are particularly keen to hook up with any of the reporters who may be out there after he has been sworn in, because the swearing in is basically, you know, a ceremonial affair. And in many instances, it's better for picture than it is for us to cross over there to hear a person take the oath. So we are more keen to hear how he expresses himself. Now, bear this in mind, though. This is not the only major event that has occurred within the last couple of hours. The observations which were made and the allegations which have been made by the Prime Minister about contracts that were dished out, that's the term I use. She didn't use that term. Just in the period after Parliament was dissolved and before the elections, I always say everything requires more than one side to a story. So far, we've heard what the Prime Minister has said. It is going to be very important to hear from people who were in government to get them to explain the background to the decisions, because they may well have some good reason why they have taken the decisions that they have. However, in the absence of their comments, it looks bad. And there really is a need for them to explain to the Barbadian public why they did some of the things that they did, because it looks as though, you know, not enough care and attention was paid to how the taxpayers' money was being spent. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I do feel that in a sense, Reverend Adderley's resignation or his appointment has come as a savior to the Democratic Labour Party, because it has taken some of the sting out of what happened yesterday. But certainly what happened yesterday sent a shiver through, you know, many Barbadian spines, and it sounded really, really bad. It sounded like a government that was not performing well, a government that was on the eve of what was a historic defeat, essentially trying to create jobs for the boys and extend contracts. And, you know, it didn't sit well, you know, in the court of public opinion. So I agree with you entirely that it creates some challenges for the Democratic Labour Party going forward. What worries me is that Prime Minister has indicated another press conference today, and that she will have another one next week. And I feel that this is the gift that will keep on giving, because she can continue, even after this period of anxiety with Adderley has passed, she can continue to present this stuff that Reverend Adderley himself will have to comment on as leader of the opposition, and will have to say whether he thinks that this is nice and this is something we should have encouraged, or whether he agrees with Prime Minister Motley that this is abhorrent.
Well, coming back to Reverend Adderley, what does his move do to and for the Democratic Labour Party?
Alienates them. I mean, I think that they are probably going to suffer even more, because they are denied the opportunity for parliamentary representation at the level of the Senate, unless he appoints to them. And I can't see any self-respecting them accepting an appointment from him. And I can't see any self-respecting be accepting an appointment from him. So my question is, can appoint if anybody at all?
You talk about self-respect among politicians. People do what is politically expedient.
I can't see, for example, any of the people that we feel should be the voice of the DLP. I can't see a Don Valinis, for example, accepting an appointment from Reverend Adderley. That would be the kind of person that I think could resonate with the public, but the reality is that he can't do that.
Yeah, but the issue is he first has to be able to convince his colleagues within the Democratic Labour Party that he is worthy of their respect in that regard. And for them to promote him to that position, you see the problem that you face in politics is that sometimes the people that we may consider to be best suited for a particular post, when you look at the internal dynamics of the party and the group, you will find that for whatever reason, those people have alienated themselves. Sometimes for the very reason that we like them, that's the same reason why the others hate them.
Yeah.
So there's no guarantee. I think what has happened with Don Valinis is that he distanced himself often enough from the policies that were being pursued by way of what he uttered, as distinct from how he voted. But at least he said the right things, and in those circumstances may be seen by many people outside of the DLP as being worthy of being given a chance. But for that same reason, the people on the inside may have their daggers out for him. So it's left to be seen how they are going to address that particular matter. I do think that they have such a tough time on their hands right now, and the revelations that have come already, and those that I understand are likely to come very soon, may put them, the mainstream, under even more pressure.
Right. And then the challenge, David, is that the DLP does not have a voice now. It doesn't have a parliamentary voice. It doesn't even have a Senate voice. And with the Prime Minister indicating that he's leaving, there's no clear person to whom we defer regarding DLP matters.
But you know they always have a voice there on Voice of Barbados.
Of course.
But the question is, are we in a circumstance now where we wouldn't have to call them, they will call us?
Well, I'm hoping that would be the outcome. But I mean,
they also have social media, though. I think that if they look at how the Prime Minister is using the social media, they'll learn a thing or two, recognize that that is one way of reaching the public in a direct way.
Yeah, but what do you say now? I mean, in light of all that has happened, you know, we haven't had that after that revelation last night. We should have had a defense from the Democratic Labour Party by now. To at least say, well, you know, things are not what they appear.
Yes.
But there's been a period of silence. And I find that fascinating because we've not really had any defense of their record from the DLP for the whole week. What we have had is a statement from the Prime Minister, a concession, and then Bobby Morris has argued in various fora that they did what happened to them happened because of their defense of the economy and, you know, the economic circumstance.
But you know what? You could understand why there is no response. Remember, former Prime Minister has said that he remains the leader of the party until their annual conference or whatever it is in August or thereabouts. He has functioned in a particular way all over the years. That cannot change. A leopard cannot change his spots. So he is not going to be, you cannot rely upon him to come out very quickly and rebut these things. He has to give this his very careful consideration. And that therein lies part of the problem that they face between now and August. They need, as a party, to come to terms with the fact that that approach did not work for them in government and will not work for them now. And they cannot allow these things to just fester without responding to them in the best possible way. And that, to my mind, captures why there has been that silence. And there may well be that silence for the rest of the weekend.
Mm-hmm. And it probably will be.
Unless somebody decides that they're going to break ranks and that they're going to defend themselves, you know? Anyhow, we're coming right back.
I'm keen.
Thanks. Mm. Down to brass tacks. Good morning. I have Peter Wickham on the line. So let me take another call along with him. Hello?
Yeah, Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, I waited until the dust has settled on the election only to come on this morning. But to be honest with you, I'm very disappointed in the position of which Mr. Afri took. Well, you know, the Democratic Labour Party has dug their own grave. The electorate buried them, and now Mr. Afri has just sealed the grave. But what I'm saying, I said a few years ago that the constitution in this country needs to get changed. Because, as you say, how can you win a ticket on one side and then all of a sudden you switch to the other side. And Mr. Affle, you was so critical of the Dems during the election. I wonder what has gone wrong that he would take a position such as that. But you see today, that's why the churches in this country don't have the amount of people in it, because it is how those people, people like Bishop Affle and others, behave. You understand? And we having real problems in this country. And I said before, a cleansing is going to come to this country. But in fact, it come already, because the Democratic Labour Party was cleansed on May the 24th. But I want to give Mayor some advice. And don't be despair. Do the job. Mr. Affle will take care of himself. But what I heard last night on the radar, I think it is very, very, very sad. We and the hierarchy, Democratic Labour Party, has a right to come on this ear and respond to what Mayor said. Because, Mr. Ellis, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a judge, I'm not a lawyer. If what Mayor said is true last night, somebody must pay. Somebody must pay. I won't go into detail, but you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think everybody understands that sentiment.
You must pay.
It cannot be business as usual in this country, where the country is already recognized to be in deep financial trouble. And those people who were charged with the responsibility of looking after our financial affairs would be expected to function in the best possible manner. So if something like this comes to the fore, as you said, the first order of business is to get a response from them. They need to be allowed to explain what happened and why it happened in the way that it did. Of course, you know, one of the things, this whole issue of governments committing the next administration to certain things is not new. And what is going to come to the fore is the argument that whatever has been done now happened before. And then on the basis of that, we are supposed to accept that as correct behavior. The difference, however, may well be on the issue of scale. While it happened before, has it happened to a greater or lesser degree on this occasion? And when you look at the economic circumstances of the country, are we better or worse able to afford this kind of conduct?
Mr. Ellis, this I believe this is a weird, weird, sad situation in this country, to be honest with you.
It
and
is.
Something like that should not happen at all, at all. Somebody must be called to account.
All right, well, let's get some other views. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
On the Bishop Azali saga, don't you think that he could join the UPP and appoint Lynette Eastman and Crystal as the two opposition senators?
Well, he may not have to join the UPP. Why would he have to join the UPP to do that? He's in a position where he may be able to recommend anybody that he wants to. Why can't he put Dennis Johnson there?
Well, I don't know. They said that the UPP is made up of Alpha B, so I don't know if he was an Alpha B or not.
I don't know. There has been some stuff circulating on the social media that would might strengthen that kind of argument. I don't really want to give it any further legs, but, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to join the UPP to reinforce where he really stands, if he does indeed stand other than with Mia Motley and the Barbados Labour Party. However, as I told you, the argument that I've heard and is being reinforced this morning with a voice note that I heard says that he remains committed to the Barbados Labour Party. Now, what he's essentially doing is saying to the Labour Party, if you think that I've done something wrong, then it's up to you to kick me out. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm still a B. So the onus is on them to do something to the contrary. Okay?
All right. What is your take on an individual who said that this is her last 5 years and she has been appointed a minister?
Well, everything revolves around the understanding that she has got with her political leader. The political leader can well say, look, we understand that, and therefore we are going to transition to somebody else. So you may find that that person is given a ministry, but somebody is put in the Senate who will come to be groomed to take over that particular seat. And what is it that is going through the mind of the Prime Minister in appointing that person to a ministry? Most of the time, one of the things that you're looking at is the question of continuity. You have some new and young people in the cabinet. They need to be groomed. They need, one of the weaknesses of the last administration was that in 2008, only one person in the cabinet had cabinet experience, and that was the late David Thompson, who died 2 years after. And that therefore meant that you had a lot of inexperience in the cabinet. This time, you do what the Labour Party has done in the past, which is to try to blend the young with the more mature. But the decision taken by Reverend Atherley also highlights a major problem. You know, it is said, to whom much is given, much is expected. It is also said that too much of anything is bad for you. And this is the dilemma facing Mia Motley in government. She would find herself criticized either way. If she made the cabinet smaller, she would have found that too many more of her sitting MPs would have been vulnerable to either influence from others or from the feeling that they were left out. And in those circumstances, might well have been ready and willing to walk across on the other side with Reverend Atherley or Bishop Atherley, because they did not get a pick. People who have had previous ministerial experience sometimes have a view that they are more entitled to a position in a cabinet than people who are newcomers who should be put in a position to wait their time. So that is the dilemma that I believe she would have faced, and that is why the cabinet is as big as it is. Now, you have to deal with two issues here. There's a political dimension, and then there's the economic reality. And as we talk about the economic reality, the government has outlined a number of measures that it proposed to take on coming to office. In the first 6 months, the government has been committed to 0.5 here in the first 6 months, helping people to live. Barbadians cannot now pay their bills or make ends meet. The BLP believes all Barbadians must be able to support their families and live with dignity. In these circumstances, it commits itself to, in the first 6 months, providing a cost of living allowance to civil servants if negotiations on salaries and benefits are not completed with the trade unions within 3 months of being elected to government, raise the non-contributory pension from $155 to $225 per week, payable every fortnight. And you can go down that list there. The big question is this now. Since you've come into government and you've discovered that the situation is far worse than you thought it would have been, mind you, when we were talking on this program before the elections, we told you this was going to happen. Huh? Everybody knows this is how it works. Now, the truth of the matter is that because of the practice, even when you have come into government and you have indeed found a situation that is markedly worse, people will just look at it as the normal political posturing associated with being in opposition or being a government. So her first challenge is to get over that hurdle of how people traditionally perceive this situation, the cynical among us. And remember, I began as one of the cynical people before this election because I expected that we would hear exactly this. So the question is, if the situation is so much worse than you anticipated, that has serious implications for your capacity to deliver on the promises that you made within the first 6 months. How are you going to deal with that? That's a reality that we can't escape. These are logical questions that you will face. It is not whether you like the government, dislike the government. It has nothing to do with that. These are the real challenges that any right-thinking person would foresee for the government in these circumstances. Okay? Peter Wickham, are you still there?
Yeah, finally.
All right, you ask Ola, and then I'll come back to Peter.
What is your take on the flippant nature of amending the Constitution?
Flippant nature?
Yeah. Well,
of amending the Constitution?
Amend the Constitution to appoint two senators.
The question that one has to answer on this question is, ultimately, what is the value of asking that a person should be in Barbados for 12 months to become a senator? It's not 12 years, it's 12 months, living in the country for 12 months. Wait. Is there merit in saying that, let's say, a Barbadian who has been living abroad and has come back home should not be restricted to having to stay in the country for 12 months? The more important issue is, what is the purpose of that particular constitutional provision, and to what extent does it really make sense? That is what I think should matter here, rather than saying you are just amending the Constitution, and the Constitution is totally sacrosanct in this regard. So that to me is what we should be looking at. If you change the Constitution in this regard, what harm do you perceive as a caller? What harm do you perceive it will do to amend the Constitution in this area?
Well, I suppose they put it there to make sure that some person has some roots in the country.
Some roots in the country. But the person is a Barbadian. This person is not from Ukraine.
A Barbadian or not, and they weren't living here.
Do you think it is absolutely necessary?
Well, I don't know why it was placed there in the first place. You've got to look at the persons who framed the Constitution and find out why they put it there. But then, if you have a reason for putting it there.
Okay, fair enough. You are going to put your confidence in those who framed the Constitution.
Of course.
Until then, you don't want to comment on whether you think it's absolutely necessary or not. Until somebody explains to you what was the thinking.
You've not joined the election. Then it was proposed that the non-contributory pensions be moved. And the LP pointed out that there was a differential between the two pensions, the contributory and the non-contributory. Kerry Simmons is reported to have said that they will go and change the Constitution to do that, what they want to do. So every time there's a problem, you go and change the Constitution.
Was there a constitutional issue there?
Well, I suppose so. That's what
I don't know that was a constitutional issue.
That there's a differential between contributory and non-contributory pensions.
But I don't know that there's a constitutional issue.
That is what Kerry Simmons was reported to have said.
Well,
they would change the Constitution to remove the differential.
I don't recall. Peter, do you recall that?
He said if we have to change the laws, then we can change the laws. And I think it's a law, it's not a constitution.
It's not a constitution.
I don't see anything wrong with changing the law because, you know, their point was that it's about choices and you can choose to change the law to delink the two. That way you can increase one without the other. And
yes.
And that seems entirely reasonable.
Yes. We're coming right back.